The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good evening. You are listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Chris Filico, the Italian Stallion, joined by another rebrand, Dougie Rainstorms, Doug Aitchison, and Jeremy Schilling. Boys, this was a series that the Red Sox easily could have swept.
Easily.
Instead, we could have been swept. And I think the more puzzling part here is that wasn't because of the offense. We scored more than enough runs in the series to win it. And the starting pitching was great. And if you told any Red Sox fan going to a series that you would have hitting, runs scored, and good starting pitching, you're feeling pretty good. But yet, we lose 2 of 3, drop the series to the Colorado Rockies. Boys, how you feeling?
Terrible. You go into, a bottom three team in the league with, with us, right? I think we're – and they take the series from you, and they really take it from you. You kind of gave it to them. They kind of take it from you. But like you said, we had the chance to sweep. In game one, Chapman blows it. It's hard to, get on a guy that, was a second blown save of the year. So it's kind of like all right, that sucks, but all right, he doesn't do that a lot. He won't do that again for a while, probably. And then you win game two, and then you come into this game. Ranger looks great. Not as great as he has, but he looks really good. The lineup shows up. You're up 6-3, and then you blow it again. This one was really tough to watch at the end because it was almost like you felt it coming right when Ranger left. It's just something about it, and they blew it, and Slayton comes in and blows it like he always does. He's a disaster right now.
Jeremy.
Well, things are going beyond bad when Dougie changes his name from Sunshine to Rain Clouds, but
you do.
I predicted this. I was on Sunday night, Father's Day with Terry. And I think I said something to the effect that they'll lose the series. They'll get good starting pitching. They won't hit. They did hit enough to win, but it's just the little things with this team. The error today by Meyer. Little things like Vasquez hits a triple, slides into third today and does some hop up, and they keep the tag on him, and so he's out. Instead of a man on third, no outs, it's an out. Did you see the play? I mean, it's ridiculous. Pop up sliding at third base? Yeah. Like, understand when a pop up slide would be appropriate. That's not it. No. So
doesn't know how to slide.
Yeah, I mean, this team routinely does the things that should be routine wrong. Not hitting a cutoff man. Today, Monasterio cuts off a ball, standing 6 feet from second base. If he lets the throw go through from Abreu to, I think, Meyer at the time, there's an out there. It's just constant nonsensical mistakes. Seemingly nothing's being corrected. Nothing changed between Alex Cora and Chad Tracy. I know we're going to get into Breslow's comments yesterday, but I'll leave that. I'll leave that for later. But I predicted the series. I'm not surprised at all. I think they should continue to lose. I've been saying that for about a month. I think it's best for what we expect from ownership moving past this season, which is to move on from Kennedy, to move on from Breslow, Driveline, and really have an organizational reset that frankly we've needed for a very long time. If they tank bad, all time bad Red Sox team. I do hope that that's going to put the leverage in place with the fan base to force John Henry to go back to who he was back when he was trying to win World Series.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here because this was a series in which the Red Sox found every which way to lose, and even the most uncharacteristic ways for the Red Sox this season, who have just been abysmal this season. The first game, we basically followed the blueprint on how to win with this iteration of the Boston Red Sox, right? Where low scoring, you score enough runs, you turn it over to the bullpen, the good part of the bullpen, right? The you know, Whitlock to Chapman, and Chapman blows the game, right? And to Doug's point, it's only done it a couple of times. Bad timing, especially when you're in the middle of potentially looking to trade him and offload him for assets. But again, you shake it off. You come back, you win pretty close. I'm sorry, you win running away in game two. And then game three, you jump out to a pretty damn good lead. And Suarez is cruising to get 9 strikeouts in this game. And again, not his best stuff, but gave you enough.
Yeah.
Gives you more than enough run support from the offense. One error and things just absolutely spiral out of control. And like you said, Doug, you could feel it, right? Because even when they stopped the bleeding, they never completely stopped it. And then you turned it over to the bullpen and they were just, I mean, there's no word for it. Just absolutely terrible. Like Slayton is just dog crap at this point.
Horrible.
No confidence, no control, just there's nothing about him going well. And before you know it, single, single, single. And the guys are just scoring runs, right? The next thing you know, they tie the game and then they take the lead. And then that's lights out on the Red Sox. And you find just putrid ways to lose this series. And I can't help but think, I think about the comments that you basically mentioned, Jeremy, as far as with Breslow, right? Or at least what I think that you're referring to, as far as this team still trying to shoot to salvage 2026 and being on the precipice of not knowing whether they should sell or not. And if it's not evident to everyone in this organization at this point that we should be selling after dropping 2 of 3 to the freaking Rockies, I don't know what to tell you. So as we turn the page to what should more than likely be an all-out sell, what do you expect and what do you take from it? And what do you also think it means possibly for Breslow?
So before I get into that, there's two types of ways you're behind in the standings. You can be 4 games back and be the third team, and you just need to jump the third wildcard team. Or you could be 4 games back and have to jump 8 teams. It's a significant difference because it's not just that you have to start playing well, which is, if you believe that, then, you know, I got a bridge to sell you. But you have to get the luck of the teams ahead of you not playing well. So this, anybody who comes to me and says, well, they're only 6.5 games out, get out of here with that. They have to jump literally every team in the American League. It ain't happening. And my issue with Breslow's comments are that, and let me preface this by saying, on Sunday, Terry and I talked about how we were hopeful that there were some changes coming and some accountability and honesty about where we were as an organization, because they move on from the driveline president and they go back to a scouting, at least a partially scouting based system where they're not just relying on data and analytics. They're actually going to put eyeballs on these athletes. And Terry and I talked Sunday night about, well, accountability. They're admitting that this was the driveline and purely data was wrong. And then this Muppet comes out today or yesterday, whenever it was, and says, well, you know, and he's like hedging. What are you doing, dude? If you're not being honest internally, that's a serious problem. Lie to the fan base. They've lied to the fan base for years. That's the Sam Kennedy MO since he's been running baseball operations. But for him to come out and say with a straight face, or at least attempt to, that they're not exactly sure what they're going to do, man, it's a terrible look. And if you were already not on the bandwagon of Breslow should not be the chief baseball operations, he clearly is in over his head on anything but pitching. it's that comment that should really concern you and bring you to the right side of things, which is where we are, in my opinion. Because he's not in charge of anything. The wheels have fallen off. It's rolling downhill. He can't be accountable. He can't be honest during interviews. He can't be honest with the media. And therefore, he's never been honest with the fan base. And this is the guy that they're putting out there to talk about the direction of the team. It's an absolute disaster. And then you look at the product on the field, and it's an exact expectation of that leadership. Poor in-game management, poor situational hitting, poor situational base running, cutting off a throw that could have resulted in an out, whatever it may be, it's institutional. It's everywhere. It's bleeding through everything. This isn't management has their situation on and they just guys are underperforming. It's you become what your leadership is as far as a personality. This entire organization, top to bottom, is an absolute clown show. And it starts with Kennedy, Breslow, and anything considering leadership below it, all the way through the players.
100%. 100%. It's just that's why, you know, guys get moved around. You know, some guys are toxic because one guy can really bring stuff down. You know, one guy can really change the mood in the locker room. One guy can really change the culture of a team and really bring a team down. I mean, one trade can hurt a team forever, like we've seen. And, you know, if we don't fire Breslow after we get swept, if we don't fire him after we lose 2-3 to the Rockies, I feel like at this point we're not going to then during the season, at least. Because I don't know what they're waiting for at this point. And then he comes out and says stuff like that. I just don't know. The longer they don't do it, the more it feels like they're not going to do it.
The timing of the firing is irrelevant to me, except for one specific point. And that is that he's not going to handle the trade deadline.
You think it happens before then?
This team has to sell, and you can't trust this guy to do it. He has, and I'm not just saying, there's two types of examples I can pull on. Just his complete failure to build a roster in the offseason. And we're not going to continue to hammer the offseason because we've done it so often. But again, guys, he has had terrible, underwhelming deadlines every single year he's been in charge. And we have a team in town that has in the very recent past shown what a proper sell at a deadline will do to a rebuild. And that is last year, okay, the Bruins sold. They got rid of Marchand. They got rid of – I mean, they sold everybody that had value except for the goalie and the cornerstones because they actually have some. We don't. But my point is you're back in the playoffs the next year. There is a recent example of an aggressive sell at a deadline resulting in a reset of the roster that's meaningful, that puts you back into the conversation the next year. It can be done. And I know crossing sports doesn't usually make sense, but it can be done. Look at the White Sox. They come from absolutely nowhere, and they're relevant. And that team's not trying to win. That's a dumpster fire. They just have amassed so much talent. They're like defaulting into winning. You know, this needs a complete reset. And I was thinking before we got on, I don't think there's a single player that I wouldn't consider for the right improvement across the board. Name it, Abreu. I've already talked about including Crochet in a deal for, I'm spacing it on his name, Yordan Alvarez. So, I mean, I'll ask you guys, does the timing of the firing matter to you? Or does it solely come down to who handles the deadline?
It's about the deadline. And, you know, I'll take it even a step further than that because, you know, I think to myself, like Kennedy, right? Because to me, like, I think I try and take things and take it backwards here, right? Because Breslow's incompetent. But at the end of the day, Kennedy's his boss. And I know we all think that Kennedy is a moron. He's a liar. But, like, at some point, it's hard for me to believe that he doesn't look at this and say, like, this is a reflection of me and I look like an absolute ass. And the more I think about it, I go, okay, the only reason he would be complicit to this is he's come to the terms that he has no idea how to fix it. He's had the opportunity to fix this now between two vice president of baseball operations and hasn't. And then you take it a step further, right? You have John Henry, who's allowing Kennedy to just do what he wants and make dumb decisions, hire the wrong people. And until we fix that, it doesn't matter. But with what we can control here, I agree with you, Jeremy. Like, this guy, it doesn't matter when it happens because this season is over, but you can't let this guy be driving the bus on, like, what are the big decisions going into this offseason, because he has proven that he can't handle that spot even when he has the full support, has the assets, and has a half-decent team. Now he's going to be doing this out of nothing but desperation and survival with limited assets, limited talent, and not much to go on moving forward, potentially into a lockout, which we all don't know what's going to happen. And we don't know if that's going to help the Red Sox. It's probably going to hurt them, even though not seeing them would help my eyes. But until they fix the root of the real problem, you know, we had a person on the show in the stream yesterday that was like, he posed the question, and it was right before we ended and get the answer. Like, are you guys sad that you got rid of Heim Bloom? And it's a loaded question because at face value, no. Like, I'm glad we got rid of Heim Bloom because he suffered from the same anemic lack of decision-making in key spots when it came to trade deadlines. Yeah, he brought in assets, but as Jeremy says, like, these potential assets and prospects that we banked on turned into nothing, and now we have nothing to show from, and they're not even tradable to bring in assets at this point. So, no, I'm not sad that we fired him. But then on the other hand, I am sad because what we brought in was even worse at this point, because as bad as Heim Bloom was, I would rather have him than freaking this guy, because at least he was able to build a prospect pool that at face value, before they came into the major leagues, we could have traded for anyone. If we would have put Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, and some of these other, Kyle Teal before we traded him, on the block, when Heim Bloom was still here, you could have had any major leaguer you wanted with the exception of maybe a Shohei Ohtani. That's how well-regarded these prospects were. And now look at us. We couldn't trade them for a bag of nickels at this point.
They almost have no value across the board.
None.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's the heart of it. And I've talked about that. I mean, between injury issues, poor performance, Meyer just can't hit. And you know, he's now making some mistakes defensively. There's no value.
That was bad today. And it's like, I mean, I'm not sad we got rid of Heim. It's like, can't we just hire someone good?
You want to have someone.
What I mean? It's like I don't have to be sad that we got rid of someone else bad, because now we have someone that's still bad. It's like, I just want someone good in this position.
So we talk about, and we've talked about, and the people in the chat have talked about it. You know, it was the 12th option, right? That's what Breslow was. It was the 12th option.
Right.
Sometimes you got to take it a step further and say, why did we get there? And the answer, the specific answer, I suspect, is the first question is Sam Kennedy going to be my boss? And when John Henry says yes, they say, you know, dial tone. That's it. So either ownership or the balance of leadership is so poorly thought of across the entire industry that you could not get a single serious candidate in to even interview. Think about that. We can go surface level. So it was a 12 prospect. It's pathetic. Understand the why. People were turning down the interview. Who turns down an opportunity? These people knew that it was so obvious to people in the industry that it was where careers go to die, that they couldn't get a serious interview. And so the guy that took the interview and spoke like an Ivy Leaguer and dressed well and had the same haircut as Sam Kennedy gets the job. And the result is as you would expect. And guys, we are going to be in the exact same spot if we get our way. with the exact same ownership and the exact same Sam Kennedy problem. My biggest fear is we get what we want in Breslow being gone, and it still doesn't get better. I don't know if we've considered that, but that is a scary proposition when you actually consider it, because you can't go to the 11 people that said no 2.5 years ago. Nothing's changed. So where did more people enter the industry that are going to take a shot? Did any of them have any background in actually organizing and building a roster? Did they have the respect of other front office people to go have meaningful conversations about trading, or to be able to speak with the agents in a way that actually resulted in you signing the goddamn player you want to sign, Bregman? So this goes so much farther than baseball. This goes into how to run a business. And so, right, this business is baseball, but these are fundamental things that you should be able to do if you're a professional. And we can't do it, or we can't hire people qualified to do it. It's not just the product on the field and watching them drop two or three to the Rockies. It's that. It's all of it. And so when I say it's an institutional failure, outside of running the actual ballpark, I don't know that there is anything that the Boston Red Sox do well that would give us fans hope that we're even within 5 years of it being better.
No, the only hope is to fire everybody from, you know, if Henry just gets rid of it, starts with Kennedy. You know, if Kennedy goes, and if they just do one day, the, you know, 2 days after the season ends, Kennedy and Breslow gone, I think that's the start of some hope.
Yeah.
One would wonder if you could get serious candidates without Kennedy around.
Well, there's only one way to do this, but to your point, Jeremy, the most valuable asset that the Red Sox have right now is Fenway Park, because it's a museum. And if we didn't have that going for us, we wouldn't even say it's a well-run ballpark. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, Fenway, yeah, it's charming. It's super old.
Don't.
I'm not going to say anything poor, Doug. But my point is, if it didn't have the allure and the history to it, like, it's, we don't have much going for us at this point. That's my point.
Yeah, yeah.
The only way to fix this, if I'm John Henry, you get rid of Breslow, I hide Sam Kennedy somewhere, give him a new title, a new role, and for the rest of the year, you have Theo be the president of baseball operations. I know it's not going to happen, Jeremy.
See, that's what I needed.
I know it's not going to happen. I'm saying what needs to happen. And I don't think anyone would disagree, because that is a much better alternative than the current state of affairs that is the Boston Red Sox. And then you have that gentleman lead the search for your new GM. With John Henry's blessing, he could sit there with his checkbook to try and save face. But you need someone, you need an adult in the room that has credibility, that's done it before, which Theo has, to be able to not put us in a situation where we're sitting there having 12 or 11 people say no to us, so that we have to hire these morons that we've hired the last two times. And that's the only way you fix it.
Doug, you want to go first?
That's all you, bud. Take it.
Now, I, to be very clear, am 100% on board with Theo running baseball operations. Hell, if he doesn't want to do it, and more on that in a second, have him run the deadline, have him handle the hiring of the next guy, and then he can step back into the bushes. And if he's not willing to do it on a long-term basis, I would love to see him take over now when we're at our absolute worst and bring us back. But the fact of the matter is, nothing gets me to roll my eyes than Red Sox fans screaming for either Theo Epstein to run baseball or Veritek to be the manager. Okay, now I'm just going to quickly touch on Veritek. He just got fired. He's not coming back. Okay, his legacy will never be altered by what happened this year. He's going to go away for a few years and he'll be back. He'll be a figurehead just like Ortiz is. He's forever loved as long as he walks this earth. But he ain't coming back.
Deservedly so.
And by the way, No one within anything close to the current iteration of the Boston Red Sox should be coming back. They need to go outside of the organization and find people that frankly know what the hell they're doing. All right. Now, as it is to Theo, if Theo wanted the job, he would have already taken the job. He would have taken it when they fired Chaim Bloom or when he was hired back by John Henry. No one can speak to how in the weeds Theo Epstein is. All right. Is he watching baseball? Is he working with the new scouting department, which I doubt? Is he so in tune with the balance of the 30 teams that he knows where the talent is? Has he been having conversations and maintaining relationships with agents? Okay. What we do know is he is a high-ranking member of the portfolio. He is involved with running John Henry's conglomerate of businesses. So I seriously doubt that he is in tune with baseball on the level that requires you to understand the data, the analytics, the personalities, the price points for players, and everything else. We all know he can do it. But here's the other thing, guys. He has nothing to prove. He is maybe the best baseball executive in the history of the sport. He came in and overturned two curses. He has nothing to prove. Now, here's the other thing we know about Theo. He doesn't want to be in the spotlight. He doesn't want to be doing interviews. He doesn't want to be answering for the product on the field. And so if you're going to run a baseball operation, you have to answer for the baseball operation. You have to go down to Fort Myers in spring training and talk to the media about the offseason. You have to sit for a press conference periodically. You have to sit for a big-time press conference after the trade deadline. You have to stand up there and pose when you sign a free agent. He has stated relentlessly that he does not want to do that, coupled with the fact that he is not ingrained in baseball, and he's running all these other ventures for John Henry. He is not coming through that door, to use a Rick Pitino quote. Again, I don't want to be full negative. I'm just trying to be real with what the information in front of us dictates. So he ain't coming.
I agree.
That doesn't mean I don't want him.
Yeah, no.
I want him. Yeah, John Henry should fire him from everything else and say, I'm hiring you for baseball. It ain't gonna happen.
Right. No, it's 100%. We all want to see it, but if it hasn't happened by now, it's not going to happen. He doesn't want to. Why would he? It's just, why would he do that? Why would he do that? If he's really just, if he takes it, I think it would be because he's just bored in his position and he kind of wants to see if he can do it again with a bad team, but it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
No way. The one thing I will say is there could be a desire to do it at some point. And the only reason I say that is because everyone has their first love. And Theo Epstein's first love professionally is the Boston Red Sox. So put him on the map and gave him the accolades that he now has. So there could be an inner desire at some point to be like, I don't like seeing this team be a mess because this is my team. I don't think it's going to happen. Again, I said it's what it needs to happen. The only thing I will say, because I don't disagree with you, Jeremy, it drives me nuts when I hear like, oh, let's make Varitek the manager. I don't get as crazy when people say I want Theo to run baseball operations. I get your point as to why it drives you crazy. But I think there's a distinct difference because we've seen many times in professional sports, Michael Jordan is an example, right? Where these players that had great careers, they try to step into some other role within an organization, whether it be as a manager, a coach, a GM, and they just can't do it because at the end of the day, being a player and running an organization or a team, completely two different skill sets. They're not transferable, nor does it mean you will be successful doing one or the other. Yeah. Whereas once you are in a front office or a coach and you've been successful, that is translatable from team to team in most cases, if you truly are as good as you are, in which Theo has proven that, right? He's broken two curses for the most cursed teams in this sport, the Red Sox and the Cubs. So I can't get on fans that want to see it happen. But I do agree with you. When I hear like Varitek, it's like we have no inkling to suggest that he will be a good manager because he was a good player. Nothing. But there's no reason for me to say I think it's crazy for someone to think that Theo would be good because he has been good. And he's done it for multiple franchises at a very high level. But it is very rare, I agree, where you see both the great Larry Bird.
Johnny, I know. Johnny beat me too. I was going to say Larry Bird, the only guy. He won Larry MVP. Bird's not good.
Okay.
He won MVP, Coach of the Year, and GM of the Year. All three.
I don't disagree. But for every Larry Bird, you have a million Michael Jordan.
That's so rare.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, yeah. Sorry, Brad.
What about Veritek's post-playing days would make you believe, when I say you, I mean anybody in the fan base, that he's ready and equipped to be a manager of a big league club?
Because he punched A-Rod.
The answer is he hasn't.
No, there's no reason.
I think he had an
undefined role in the dugout, and it led to what's loading to be one of the worst Red Sox teams in the history of the brand.
Right.
I'm going to cross sports really quickly. The best part about Vrabel is that he went to the Texans, he went to Ohio State, he went and went to the Titans, and then he came back. So it wasn't all about what he knew from one organization.
Yeah.
They are so rare. And you want to bring up Larry Bird. Larry Bird won Coach of the Year and GM of the Year as a Pacer.
Right.
He didn't do it in Boston. Guys that stay in one location and don't branch out, learn other systems, learn how they evaluate players and personnel, how they negotiate, how they manage the payroll, how working with different executives, different owners. And then you come back and you have a well-rounded basis to go do your job. It's very rare that somebody comes up in one, and you can do this in any system, any organization. It's very rare that somebody just has one spot on the ladder and just keeps climbing and runs the top of the ship at a high level. It doesn't happen. So I just stop with it.
I think
Johnny, he did learn a lot from Belichick. But he went and learned from Day in Ohio State, O'Brien with the Texans. He stopped a couple other places, and then he ran his own ship with the Titans. The Vrabel that runs the New England Patriots today has taken pieces from the Patriots and Belichick, from Ohio State, from the Texans, from the Titans, and all the other stops along the way. To say that Vrabel's success so far with the Patriots is built on the back of being a Patriot is factually not accurate.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that I think you get, whether it's Veritek for us or like even with Michael Jordan, right? You get these guys that have successful careers specifically where they are the alpha leader of a team, the captain, if you will, which Veritek was for that iteration of the Boston Red Sox. But again, to your point, that doesn't, just because he was the captain of the 2004 Boston Red Sox that broke a curse doesn't mean he can manage a baseball team. I 100% agree. But you do have, you know, like you said, Belichick, right? Like he learned from Parcells, but he left the Giants and then he went to other organizations. He failed in a couple spots, but then he found his niche with the Patriots. And then like now he has Vrabel and all these other people that come from his tree. So it happens in other sports, but going from player to all those things, very, very rare. Larry Bird is the exception, not the rule. But I think we've touched on this enough. Let's get back to the Red Sox, as much as I hate them, and go into the projections for the next series, in which it looks like we are taking on the vaunted New York Yankees, which we are 15 games behind in the AL East. And tomorrow the Yankees will have Warren on the mound against Peyton Tolley. And then Saturday we have Cole against Bennett. And then to close us out on Sunday, please God, don't let it be Sunday night baseball. Damn it, it is. We have Rodon against Gray. How are you guys feeling?
Not good. I think I'm not going to pick against Sonny Gray at this point. He's pitching phenomenal. I mean, he looked lights out.
Pitch in the Yankees series.
He said he pitched Sunday, right?
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he does. He's Sunday night baseball.
So I'll take that one. He's looked great. 11 strikeouts his last game. I mean, he's looked really good. And our thing is losing 2 out of 3 right now. You know, I would say if it was even early, who I still really like, I would probably still say sweep, but I'll give one to Gray just the way he's looking right now, and we lose 2 out of 3.
So this has been my prediction every time I do one of these. The starter's going to give you a chance. They're going to compete. We won't hit and we'll lose. They may win a game, To go in and predict which game it would be is a fool's errand. They could easily get swept. But the fact is that this team's mode of operating is the pitcher, the starting pitcher will battle and give you a chance to win 5-6 innings, 2-3 earned runs at every expectation with that type of start to win the game, but they will not hit and they will not win.
Yeah, it's interesting. Out of all the games, as much as I want to say Gray historically has not pitched well in the AL East. So that kind of scares me. I think he's due to get absolutely, like, just absolutely rocketed out of Yankee Stadium at this point. I actually think that Peyton Tolley gives us possibly the best shot. I think the emotions, the fire, if he has a good start, they may just not have anything against him at that point. It's also the most favorable matchup. Gerrit Cole, we used to not be scared of him, but we also don't have Rafael Devers anymore, and that's the only reason we weren't scared of him. And Sonny Gray, like I said, historically not very good against the AL East. It's also Sunday night baseball. We're 15 games behind the New York Yankees for a reason, right? They are a much better team with or without Aaron Judge than we are. We have nothing to hope for. The one Yankee killer we had now plays for the San Francisco Giants, although they are looking to trade him, and we have people that want him back. I do not. I want to move on from this iteration of the Boston Red Sox and just, like, come up with a new team. So I will leave it there. You gentlemen, anything else?
I can't imagine that I do, Chris.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right. Well, we have been the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. For more well-written content and articles, go to our Substack at bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Thank you very much for stopping by, and I wish I could say go Red Sox, but